Thank you for listening to this teaching from Forerunner Fellowship. For more teachings or to subscribe to our podcast, as well as information about our congregation, visit our website at forerunnerfellowship.org.
Boldness in the face of opposition. And our kind of banner verse today is going to be out of James 1. You can turn there if you'd like, starting in verse 2. My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience, but let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. That one is so challenging to me and encouraging all at the same time. In this message, we're going to be talking about recognizing opposition. And, you know, in that verse that James is exhorting us, that we would be rejoicing in every trial. And I'm just changing that word into opposition because trial and opposition have very many different faces. And we're going to just kind of talk about that and what it means to be bold in the face of that opposition. So, you know, speaking of pregnancy and the development of a baby inside of a mother's womb, there is opposition, even from the very moment that we are conceived, and there is right in the midst of that opposition, the desire, the inherent will that God has placed inside of humans to thrive, to live, to survive, and ultimately to love God, to be great in God. Now, it takes a little while for us to recognize what that actually means to be great in God, and once we begin our way in the Lord, that we can begin to discern, this is what I was created for. This is what I was actually made for. That we would love God, but even after that, opposition still remains. And whether you're a passive type of person or active or in different seasons, maybe passive or active, the fact of it is that we cannot escape the opposition or those trials. And though there's many variables that are out of our control, it is the Lord's desire that we would be great in Him, that we would love Him as He created us to do. You know, God created us intentionally. I think of the chapter in Ephesians, the very first chapter that just, if you read it one glance over, you might catch like 1 or 2% of it just because of how multi-layered and just packed it is of mysteries and revelation just being unfolded in this chapter. And what it comes down to is that God created you with intentionality, with specific purpose. He thought about what you would be like. He thought about the time period that you would be born in, the people that we would interact with, the families that we would be born into, and He did it on purpose. He did all of these different variables in the relationships and all of the different dynamics. He did it on purpose, and He really did have the choice before the foundation of the world. You can read in Ephesians, he's thinking of, in his perfect plan, how could I create a person? Now fill in your name, and how could I create you in a specific time period with specific purpose? And He had a choice. He had different ways to create. And when He came down to the decision, the bottom line, He created you. And He chose you before the foundation of the earth. And that was His desire, to create you for relationship. He created you, He created me specifically for love, that we would be before Him, holy and in love, as Ephesians 1 says. And when we look at the big picture like that, I believe what it really comes down to is that's one way that we can define success. In the midst of trial, I know that sometimes we're faced with opposition, we're faced with questions and doubts, and a lot of times what it ends up doing is causes us to really start to put things in perspective. And if we can take a step back and just look at the eternal perspective of what the Lord really meant to do, what was His intention? You know, you can gauge success based off of what was your intention. I mean, for a sports analogy, if you're lined up at the free throw line and you shoot the ball and it goes to the hoop, you were successful because that was your intention. Well, in the same way, God's intention, His desire, was that He would be able to love us, and He does that perfectly. And then the other part of that is that we would love Him back. Now, if we look at our lives, no matter what trial we're going through, no matter what opposition we face, if we can look through that lens, the eternal perspective of what was God's intention when He created us, and that is He created us to love us and for us to love Him back, for relationship. And if we can look at our lives through that lens, no matter what trial we're going through, we really can rejoice. We really can say, I'm a success because God loves me and I love God. And, you know, there are different ways of gauging your success and all of that. But when we look at that eternal perspective and when we look through that lens, I find that we can actually start the day as a success. For a long time, I would kind of, when it came to the end of the day, I would take a reflection, an account of how did the day go? Did I mess up less than the times that I did mess up? And if the balance was I didn't mess up that much, then I would say, okay, I'm a success. The problem with that is, if you are successful, quote-unquote successful, more times than not, then we have this propensity to be prideful, and that's not good. And then if we're on the other end, if we're continually not measuring up to our own standard, then we have the propensity to shame. So it's like you have pride on one hand and then shame on the other, and there's no way to win. But if we can go through the lens of I love God, He loves me, that was His design and His intention from the foundation of the earth, I start out the day as a success. And so if my car breaks down or my bank account gets robbed or whatever happens, fill in the blank, it's okay. I'm a success starting out. And I believe that big picture is one of the ways, if not the way, to start our day as a success and really rejoice in every trial and to let patience have its perfect way work in us. And so with that, when I start to question those things, that didn't just start out that way. It really is a process of, I'm facing a trial. There's that opposition, that friction, that loss of momentum. Opposition can look a whole lot of different ways. But whenever there is opposition, basically we're doing one thing, we're going one way, and there's something that's either rerouting us or coming straight against us. And what it really does, whether it's a car breaking down or a relationship that's starting to break down or something didn't happen or there's a traffic jam or whatever the case may be, what it really does, those oppositions, those trials, give us the opportunity to either reinforce our value system, what we believe about God and about ourselves, and either reinforce it or begin to deviate and change into something else. And so those different trials, those different circumstances that we all face, there is nothing new under the sun. It might look a little different on the face, but there are the same trials that have happened from day one throughout human history. And so when we all face these different trials and go through these different seasons, what it really comes down to is it is either reinforcing our value system or it's starting to change our value system. And I found myself in this question and in this struggle with the Lord several times. And when it's one of those big trials, it's like, Lord, why am I even doing this? Does it matter? Why am I on earth? Why am I putting so much effort into this if it's not going to turn out the way I thought it was? What am I doing? Should I be doing it? When I begin to question these different motivations and outcomes and different things, the Lord is so faithful to recenter me into what I believe, and he's okay that we come into those questions, so long as we give Him an open door to speak. And I find the Lord speaking in those situations and just reaffirming me. And as I'm questioning, Lord, what am I doing? Why? Does it matter? And the Lord just reminds me, you were created to love me, and you do love me, and I love you too. Therefore, it's a success. Therefore, at the end of the day, when all of the accounts are settled and reconciled, I'm a success. And what it does is it really solidifies and reinforces the belief in the Lord and what His intention was. And so, He chose us in Him before the foundation of the world to be in relationship with Him. That was the purpose. That was the intention. Now, that's the first part of the strategy, and that's crucial for us to understand, but it's not the sole reason for our being. Another part of the strategy is for our function. It's for the role that we would play. We have relationship, and then we have role. And really what it comes down to is that our role flows out of and expresses the first part, our relationship. You can look at it through the first and greatest commandment and the second. Jesus is asked, what is the greatest commandment? And He says, to love the Lord your God with everything. And the second is just like it, to love your neighbor as yourself. And it's part of that role that flows out of the first commandment. And however our part of the story may look on the outside, significant, insignificant, big, small, whatever, the Lord has ordained that we would have a certain part in the story. And it matters to God. You know, as Paul goes through the analogy of the body having different parts and different functions, and each one depending on one another, he really just paints the picture of no matter how seemingly insignificant the role is, it is still the Lord's role, and it is still God created and still intention. So the whole purpose of this trial, as that verse in James 1:2-3 says, is that there would be an inside, internal working that He is working for our good. In Romans 8 or 6, He says to not worry about all of the things that are going on because He works all things for the good of those who love Him. So no matter what happens, if you pair this with that verse in James, He's working in us for something better and really for our good, for a greater inheritance. And God uses opposition. He uses these trials to refine us. And so God is perfect. We know that. God is perfect. He needs nothing. But He does want something. And what He wants is relationship. He wants cooperation. It's not like He's lonely, but that He has something to give. And through the relationship, it is His preference to partner with mankind to accomplish His will, to accomplish His initiatives, to advance the kingdom. And the issue comes to a perfect God using imperfect people who lack all of the things that He has: love, joy, peace, patience, gentleness, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, and self-control. You know, the fruit of the Holy Spirit, He infuses us through fellowship with the Holy Spirit, that as a result, we would have fruit that is more like Him so that we can get the things done for Him and, more importantly, with Him. It would be different if there was no relationship and He would just send out the order, send out the command, but it's it's different than that. It's relationship, that we would not just do things for him, but we would do things with him. So relationship, he creates us for relationship. He creates us with a purpose, with role to accomplish and to fulfill. And it's because we're imperfect creatures that we are in need of that refining. One, so that we would be more like him and that we could carry out a task and not be puffed up with pride, that we would carry out that task, carry out that role, that responsibility, whatever it is, and that in the process we would be turning all of the attention to the Lord, that it would be his kingdom. He's the only star in the kingdom, and there really is no competition. He is truly worthy of everything, even the things that we accomplish for him and with him. But we have to become vessels that can be entrusted with that stewardship. And so that's really the purpose of these trials, is for us to be refined in our character, for us to be refined in our faithfulness, in the things that we steward, and more trustworthy, and also more experienced, more skilled. And in the process, we would be able to do those tasks, those responsibilities, those roles more effectively. I think one of the troubling for young leaders coming up, really it can sometimes fall on one side or the other of kind of your skill set, your advantages and disadvantages of. Jesus said that we ought to be wise as serpents and innocent as doves. And I think sometimes we fall on one side or the other, but he said we should be both. And in these trials, he's refining our skill set. He's refining our experiences while at the same time humbling us, that we would not be more in our eyes than what we really are. In the kingdom, as we walk longer with him, and as we approach that door that he is calling us to higher, the way becomes more narrow and the door becomes smaller. The doorway becomes smaller. And really, for us to continue in, we have to continue to decrease as he increases. And so the use of opposition is really for a conversation piece. You know, a conversation piece is normally something at a house or a building that you would walk by and say, "Hey, that's nice. Tell me about that." The conversation piece, though, in the relationship with the Lord is the fact that we have trial, that we have opposition. It's one of the primary ways that we are strengthened. Our half of the relationship can be improved on, and the way that the Lord does that is through opposition. So I'm going to list a couple of ways opposition looks to kind of paint the picture a little more directly. Adversity, friction, delay. You know, over at the prayer room, there is such a corporate delay that's going on right now, and that is one of the biggest trials and oppositions is what do you do when it is not glamorous, when it is boring, when it is not what you thought it was, and the delay is setting in, and it is tough. It is definitely a type of opposition. It makes things difficult. Other types of opposition, other people's actions and words and disapprovals and arguments and criticisms and even competition, other things, discomfort. I love air conditioning. I love the fact that we can drive places, all the conveniences, and the moment when one of those conveniences is taken away, you just feel that sting of, man, I was really comfortable with that AC or with that car or whatever it is. You know, I love when I pull up to a store that I need to go to and it's that closest parking spot. You know, all the different conveniences and even the different trials of that we as Americans have to face, like waiting in line too long or sitting in a traffic jam, and like all of these different things that really just fly in the face of, I want things to be really easy, happen really quick, and whenever it doesn't go that way, we can call it a trial. And really, again, what it comes down to is it's an occasion to turn to the Lord, and we'll get into that. But what it really does is it refines or defines our value system of what it is that we actually believe. You know, one of the things about metal, specifically during the Iron Age, as tools and weapons were starting to be formed, in some of the battles that you'll find that Israel was faced against different countries, when they had iron and they had people who could work with that metal, they were set at a disadvantage because they didn't have metal weapons or metal tools. And as soon as those were introduced, things got a lot easier. Now with iron, if you've ever seen some, you know, PBS show or something like that of a metal worker, or done it yourself, any type of welding or metal work or anything like that, you know that metal, depending on what type of metal it is more malleable, is easier to be formed when there's a couple circumstances that are favorable to change, and that is heat and pressure. And I feel like the Lord put that example in the earth for us to learn from, that whenever the Lord is trying to change us, two of the big ways, figuratively, is through heat and pressure. The metal is more easily formed whenever it's in that fire and it gets heated up to a temperature that it's not normally forced to be in, and then when that hammer is at it. When the hammer and the heat is on, is when that metal can be formed into what the craftsman has desired. And so God is, in a same way, able to change us most under the fire and pressure. And it's according to his good pleasure. The thing that I had to learn, and I think we all have to learn, is learning to trust that master craftsman in when the hammer blows and when the fire stoked. Lord, I got to trust in what you're doing, because this does not feel good right now. And that's how it is in those trials. And really, the exhortation that James gives really is the right perspective of rejoice in that trial, because at the end of this trial, you're going to be better for it. And it's the Lord working his good pleasure. All right, so let's talk about, we've talked about types of opposition. I want to get right into the source of opposition, because that's where I think we can take away some of the application. One of the maybe frustrating, maybe biggest eye-opening revelations that I came to recognize was when I was facing these trials and these oppositions, the source of the opposition could not be prayed away, because it was God. It was God who was sending the opposition, like I was saying, with that fire and with that pressure. It was the Lord's intention for us for me to be going through that, and it would not flee. If I withstood, it would not go away, because it was the Lord's Lord's purpose for me to go through that. And one of the things I've really here recently had to learn how to pray a little bit differently. I used to pray, God, make it go away, but really the I think more accurate prayer is, God, give me strength for this, because you think this is a good idea for this trial to be in my life. So give me strength to withstand in the midst of it. It's tough to try and pray away the opposition when it's God. You can't You can't just say, go away. You know, Jesus, go away in Jesus' name. It doesn't work like that. One of the most remarkable examples that I find of God being opposition is Jacob wrestling. To set the storyline a little bit, if you're a little rusty on that particular story, Jacob has worked for a couple decades for his father-in-law so that he could have his wife. So they leave and they have an inheritance, and they're journeying back home to the land of Canaan where Jacob is from. And he finds that he has to go back through the territory, the land of his brother Esau. Now, if you remember back to the story, Jacob was acting deceiving, and he took the birthright of Esau, and he had to flee because he was going to be hurt or killed by Esau for taking his birthright. So all these years have passed. Now Jacob and his family have amassed all this great inheritance, this wealth, these different herds and assets and things, and they're journeying back, and he is scared. He's deeply afraid because he knows that he's going to face his brother, and he's remembering back to the part of the promise of what his inheritance is going to be. And so the night before he's to meet Esau and really face this trouble, and really what it comes down to is life or death. Right before this fateful day, in the nighttime, he's faced with an opponent, and it's the pre-incarnate Jesus, and he goes 10 rounds with Jesus, and he's after a blessing. He's after... He's wrestling with Jesus. I just can't imagine what that would have been like. And at the end of it, he walks away with his blessing and with a story to tell and with a limp. The Lord touches his hip socket and he walks away. And really what that wrestling match was all about was the Lord recentering and reorienting Jacob in what his beliefs were, because Jacob was really afraid of it not going down the way he thought it would, of the promise not coming to pass like he was hoping in it. And what the Lord was more trying to prove to Jacob was, are you after the promise the way that you thought it was going to be, or are you more in tune with, are you more in relationship with the God of the promise? And I find myself in that category often. And the Lord is faithful to recenter me. And I think we can all find ourselves in that. We are oftentimes finding ourselves holding on to the promise more than we are holding on to the God of the promise. And this event really reoriented and centered him in his beliefs about God and even about himself. And so he hobbled away knowing that he could face his brother Esau the next day, and no matter what the outcome was, that he was blessed, that he was God's man. And when he walks away with a name change into Israel, he knows that he really is part of the bloodline. He really is part of the story. Now, if you remember even further back into the story, Jacob would have grown up hearing the story from his father Isaac, who had his own story of really a trial of proving his belief system. Jacob needed an encounter with God that would remind him of who he was before God and that he could trust God's word, even if he did lose everything. Now, the story with Isaac and Jacob, Isaac would have been probably in his teens at the time, and his father Abraham would have been way advanced in age, over 100. And he gets a word from the Lord to go up to the mountain and sacrifice. And he convinces Isaac to go up and carry the load of wood up the mountain. And Isaac is kind of questioning, looking around for, you know, where's the animal? You know, what are we going to use for sacrifice? And they get up and they trek to the mountain. And he is able to be convinced and really go along with the story of allowing his dad to tie him up with ropes and get up on the altar. And I imagine that Isaac would have been questioning, just like Abraham would have been questioning, what is this promise? Because God had promised Abraham, and Isaac would have heard the story as well, that Abraham was going to be the father of many nations, that he would be the one to have descendants who were as numerous as the stars of the sky and as numerous as the sand of the seashore. But yet here they are on this altar, and Abraham has the knife up above Isaac. And what was this promise that God had made? And really, the trial was coming to the heart of it. Were they more focused with the promise of them being a part of this great lineage, or were they more trusting, were they more in tune with the God of that promise? And so I'm sure they were doubting. I'm sure they were thinking, you know, I thought I was a part of this promise. And what a relief it was to them both, probably when they hear the sacrifice caught in the thicket. And so God was testing Abraham, God was testing Isaac, God was testing Jacob and all of these. And we probably won't have anything to that degree of you know, having to be tied up on an altar. But our own trials will really cause us to really reorder things, to really refocus things, to look at our belief system of what it is that we truly believe. And while Abraham trusted the Lord to provide enough to let it all build up to that point, he really did walk away refined in his own beliefs. So, that's a couple ways that the Lord Himself was opposition. He sends opposition in different ways. One of the other ways that we find ourselves really in opposition are the different seasons that we go through, and this can be individual and corporate. And as I was talking about a second ago, the prayer room corporately is in a season right now where things are difficult. And part of the way that plays out is individually it's difficult, and you may find yourself in different seasons, and really what those seasons do are really raise the questions to the Lord. Our tests are designed to work in us that greater good, and the different seasons that we go through, no matter what they are, really can be used as opportunity to turn to the Lord. One of those early seasons that I see in the Word, and even more highlighted in the life of David, is early promotion, and really the question that arises in that season of early promotion is, Lord, I'm not ready for this. People don't think I'm qualified. I don't think I'm qualified, but you think I am for some reason, and I'm getting promoted early into this role or into this position or whatever it might be, and really, again, that trial, that those testings, that opposition is really meant for us to refine our character, to give us experience, to give us the skills to be able to be steward. Another one, another season, not early promotion, but delayed promotion. I'm not sure which one is worse, the early promotion or delayed promotion. In delayed promotion, there are those questions of doubt of, Lord, I thought it was you. Did I miss it? I think I'm ready, but you don't think I'm ready for some reason, or did you forget about me? People, again, if you're listening to the opinions of other people, they don't think I'm ready. They don't think I'm qualified. What's the deal? Overlooked is another one that is another way to describe that. So you have early promotion, delayed promotion. Another one is demotion. Now that one's painful too. If you've experienced demotion, man, the questions come up again. They don't think I'm qualified. What did I do wrong? And maybe you really did do something wrong. And the Lord is using these different seasons to really refocus our relationship and really what is our intention. Because going back to it again, if we're looking at our circumstances to define our success, to define our relationship, we really can be tossed to and fro like the wind, and we can really get confused on why we're on earth. Why are we doing the things that we do? What is the purpose? But if we can remember the grand scheme of things, the eternal perspective is that we would be created for Him, and that we would be in love and be loved. And if we can do that, then we can be successful. Another season, and I think this is maybe not as easily defined as a season. This is probably just different events that may occur is when different comforts are taken away. And man, when those comforts are taken away, you remember how much you enjoyed them, and oftentimes how we took them for granted. And sometimes we begin to question the justice of it, or maybe even the intention. Why were we doing it to begin with? It's not what I signed up for, and all the different things. So those are a couple different ways that the Lord will use seasons, independent of different events. But what it comes down to, all of those are different trials and tribulations and opposition, but what it comes down to is, what is the point? Now we talked about the Lord's desires to refine us, and that's true, but really what that comes down to is the Lord is using these all as conversation pieces. And these scenarios are in opposition of how we like things to happen and the way that we would prefer things to happen. But what it comes down to is the question and the answer of, what is my source? Are these circumstances my source, or is God my source despite those circumstances? And we have to be ready to answer that question in the midst of it. So when it's difficult, when it's a trial, when it's a tribulation, when there's friction, when there's delay, or when there's early promotion or demotion or whatever the circumstance, what it comes down to is that we're not getting our way. We thought it would be one way, and it happens to be another. And really, if we were honest, the way that we would like it is to have clear roads, close parking spots, no lines at the store, awesome relationships with our family and with our friends. We would have, you know, fat wallets and awesome stuff, and you know, everything would be going awesome for us all the time. But that's not that would really, when it comes down to it, leave God out of the question, leave God out of the scenario. And so because of that, he is not content with being left out of the question, left out of the scenario, the equation. And so he allows traffic jams and lines at the store and busy parking lots and scenarios for us to really be stuck with opposition, with trial. And so what is the point? What is it all for? We have to remember that God created us for relationship. And so he uses these stimulus, these events, for the conversation to start. And if we don't write it off, and if we consider it, That is something that a lot of the world does not do. If you were to somehow be able to gauge when trouble hits, how many people worldwide just count it as a coincidence, bad day or whatever. But if we take a second to stop and consider it as something maybe from the Lord, that is fairly normal, but not the the majority or the whole comprehensive population. So beyond that, if we say, okay, is this something that the Lord is doing? Oftentimes, I think what we end up doing is we begin to contemplate and have that conversation with ourselves. That's fairly normal. That's not the best way to go about it. Or maybe we talk with a friend. You know, if we don't talk, in our heads to ourselves about the situation, the trial, the tribulation, the hard thing that's going on, that fire, that pressure, we might talk it over with the friend. And that's okay, but again, that's not the best way. But if we turn to the Lord and use that as the conversation, so God sent the trial, the tribulation, the whatever, as the conversation piece, and if we actually respond in the way that He intentions and talk to God about it, that is rare as gold in the earth. And that's His intention. In Ephesians 3, Paul talks about this mystery that is really scandalous. And that mystery is that we would be able to talk to God about whatever, fill in the blank, about the really hard thing that we're going through, about the money that we just got stolen, the thing that we're being deprived of, the thing that we're missing, the thing that we have too much of, or whatever the case is, that we would be able to approach God and talk to Him about your stubbed toe, about your bank account, about whatever. It is the mystery that has been hidden throughout all of humanity that the angels marvel at and demons mock, that us as imperfect but loved of God, creations can talk to the Creator about our stuff. And God is the one who's starting the conversation. When we turn it back to the Lord, that's really the point. And I have to remind myself of that so many times. That really is the point, that we would talk to God. That's His design all the way, but it's been hidden. When we face the opposition, it truly is a rare thing to turn that into conversation with the Lord. He's speaking through the opposition, through the friction, through the trial or the tribulation. And it's His intention that we would turn it back. We just don't always do that. And it's His intention that we would. He wants us to take the situation to Him, no matter the size. And that truly is what boldness is. If you were to try and go to some foreign country that still uses like a monarchy type system of government, and you wanted to go and talk to the king, you would be hard-pressed to be able to just go into the court and then talk to the king. There is a system and there is a process, and it is not instantaneous. But the Lord uses this mystery that's hidden in plain sight, that we can actually turn to the Lord and talk to Him about whatever, about the humidity, about the traffic jam, about the hangnail you got, or whatever it is, that we could talk to the Lord about these things. It's not like you would ever hear the Lord respond if you talk to Him about, Lord, I'm out of mustard right now. And He would say, don't talk to me about that. Come to me when you've got something better to talk about. He would never say that, because He loves that we would turn to Him in conversation. Again, He's not lonely, but He loves relationship. He has something to give. He's perfect. We are imperfect. We can only benefit from this. And it's His desire that, we would turn to Him in conversation. In this message, I don't want it to seem like God is the one who is always the reason for our problems, but it's in His will that we would have trials and tribulation. He uses the things that the enemy sends. He uses the things that are just the way that life is. He uses the natural processes of life, the natural processes of relationship and the different dynamics of being human and having miscommunications and different assumptions and thinking you heard one thing when it was really another. He uses all of these things for our good, for us, that patience would have its perfect work in us. So I don't want you to think that God is the reason for all of them, but He definitely uses all of these different situations for our good. This truly is boldness. This truly is the way to have boldness in the face of opposition, no matter what your trial is. If you are human, and if you are a Christian, and if you have a pulse right now, you are likely in a trial or just out of a trial or about to go through a trial. We're in one of those three categories. And whatever the trial is, I want to encourage you, I want to encourage us that we would turn it to the Lord no matter what the situation is. If the worst thing that you have going on right now is that the mustard is out in the fridge, consider yourself blessed, but still talk to the Lord about it. He'll have a conversation with you about mustard, about your broke down car, or about the finances that are going low. He loves us. We love Him, and it's His desire, it's His plan that we would turn to Him about whatever in conversation. I find it that access that we're given that you can read about in Ephesians 3, that we are given to approach Him boldly. The King of or the Queen of England would not talk to you about mustard, about your finances, about whatever. But the Lord will. And He is the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords. And He's willing that we would have that conversation. And it is a rare thing. So I want to encourage us in that. Want to give us a couple of other sources of opposition real quick before we end tonight. Like I said, the Lord will use whatever circumstance that is a trial for our good. You know, one of the oppositions that you'll find is from your parents, or as a parent, I find myself often in opposition to my daughters. You know, when they're reaching for the candy or whatever, it's okay that the parent tells the child, you know, what to eat, when to eat, what to wear, and things like that. That's okay. That is a good source of opposition. Now, that gets a little weird, you know, when they're older, for the parents to still be doing that. But the intention is that there would be some type of learning, that there would be a refining. Another source of opposition is leaders. I think it's appropriate, and I think it's healthy for us to have people in our lives to tell us no. That's why I love our three that we do, including the small groups, that we would be in authority and under authority, and that I have somebody in my life who can tell me, hey Andy, that's don't do that. That's dumb. I like being able to have someone tell me that, somebody that I can turn some of those decisions to, or even give me counsel on whatever it would be. And even being one of those leaders to tell somebody no in a situation. It is so humbling to be told no. It is so humbling to have to tell someone no about something. There's different scenarios, but to take that spiritual responsibility and to be under spiritual authority is very good, because it's humbling for both people, for everybody involved. Other sources of trials and tribulations are just all the different relationships we have, brothers, sisters, friends, whatever it may be. Other opposition, of course, we just came fresh off of a series that Brad did a few weeks ago on about common attacks that we face. And if you didn't hear that one, you want to go back and hear that one. It is super entertaining, at least. Very appropriate of talking about attacks and opposition from the devil and how to resist those and all of the different things that the enemy would throw at us and through people who are demonically influenced. And those are different ways that we are put in trial and tribulation. One of the most interesting ones, though, is when we have trial from within, when our sinful desires and when the flesh wants to go wild, and Paul says that he does the things that he doesn't want to do, and the things he wants to do he doesn't do, and that whole dynamic of the sinful desire and all of that. So that's the negative side. Another type of opposition that we put ourselves through voluntarily is living the fasted lifestyle. You want to talk about opposition, fasting. Don't eat for a little while. And man, that is a trial. That is opposition. Your body will remind you of it. And again, those opposition, those trials are for our good. And what it comes down to is, no matter the source of the opposition, no matter the source of the trial, it is for our good. And we can rejoice in it. And knowing that patience has its perfect work in us, and that we really are benefited by it. In whatever situation, we really can trust His leadership. He is a good shepherd, and He shepherds us so well. And He knows what we need and when we need it, and what we really don't need, and everywhere in between. And He truly is such a good shepherd. I want to close this out with a verse in Romans 8. For whatever trial that you're in, if you guys would stand, I want to pray for us. No matter what trial you find yourself in today, or you might find yourself in the future, we can consider the sufferings of this present time. This is Romans 8, 18. For I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worth comparing with the glory that is to be revealed in us.
This concludes this teaching from Forerunner Fellowship. For more information about our congregation, visit forerunnerfellowship.org. Thank you.